I've had the privilege of being in and around banking for more than 50 years. Lots of changes during that time. We've gone from ledgers to laptops, typewriters to technology. One thing, however, remains the same. Banking is a people business, and I'll be talking with those people that make banking great here on Jackrants with Modern Bankers.
Welcome to Jackrants with Modern Bankers. It's brought to you every week by RelPro and Vertical IQ. You see, after six decades in banking, it's time to give back, and I hope this program amplifies that message. Every week, I feature top voices in financial services, from bankers and consultants to best-selling authors and more. The goal here is simple. It's to provide insights, success practices, and to bring new ideas to the table that you can use to maximize your results in this very important year, 2024. I've met thousands of bankers over the past 51 years, and Chris Nichols is likely the most thoughtful one I've ever come across. After earning an economics degree from UC Santa Barbara, he started his banking career at Mitsubishi Trust and Bank of America. He founded two non-bank firms, and then he had a stint at Pacific Coast Bankers Bank Shares too. He joined Center State Bank in 2013 as Chief Strategy Officer, and that's where I got to know him. When Center State merged with South State Bank, Chris got back to his roots and was named Director of Capital Markets at South State Bank's Correspondent Division. Chris speaks everywhere, and when he talks, bankers listen. He also serves as an advisor to the annual ABA Marketing Convention and the S&P Global Market Intelligence Conference. Want some really great information on AI, deposits, treasury management, some pending legislation, and more? Check out this interview with Chris Nichols on Jackrants with Modern Bankers. Here we go. Chris, what a privilege it is to have you on today. I appreciate your time.
Jack, the honor's mine. Thanks for having me.
So before we start with questions, I got to read y'all something, because there is a myth out there that you can't do business on LinkedIn. You can, but you just got to do it the right way. So it's January 22nd of 2018. I'm reading this guy, Chris Nichols, and all these articles that he writes. And y'all got to follow him for sure. He's got 15,000 of you that do already. So I sent him this message on LinkedIn. Hey, Chris, your articles are always spot on and practical. The most recent one you posted on commercial lenders is the best. I passed it on to several folks and plan to share it with my network. Congratulations on making some very sound recommendations on this key subject. Now, you tell me where it says, I'd like to sell you some sales training. But here's the great thing. January 23rd, the next day at 11:04 a.m., Chris says, if you want to give me a call on Thursday or Friday, as I would love to learn more about your expertise and see if we can't leverage your services for sales training. So that started a relationship with Chris Nichols. I've spoken with him, I've written with him, and I've caught his bankers. And Chris Nichols is the real deal. So I don't gush, let me just start and ask you, Chris, about the South State Bank Correspondent Division and your role in that organization.
Well, thanks, Jack. I appreciate that intro. It's thank you. I don't know if I can live up to it, but I will say on LinkedIn, it's a great, fantastic example. I know you teach it all the time, but you know, we followed a bunch of sales gurus, so to speak, for a while. You are one that have risen to the top in just the quality of content. There was no need up until that point that if you were to ever reach out to me or anybody were to reach out to me, I would have given them the Heisman and just said, hey, we're not in the market. We don't have a pain point right now. It just so happens that in a span of 2 or 3 months that we recognized we did have a problem, and we did have budget, we did have the approval to move forward. And so I reached out to, I thought, what I thought was the best in the business across the board, got a small group there, and then interviewed each of them. But that was one where you were always at the forefront of my mind because of the quality of content. And when we were ready, I reached out, and I got to say, you know, and I tell everyone this, like, if you ever want to see someone that walks the talk, it's Jack. Like, you've done exactly as you teached every step of the way, and it's been appreciative every step of the way. And so you continue to impress me on that, which is why you know, we ended up using you and why we still follow you and why we still expound your teachings. So all good. In terms of South State's correspondent division, you know, we exist. We have a number of specialties within South State Bank. And one of them happens to be correspondent banking. And we have, you know, some 4,000 banks. We talk to 1,200 active-ish customers that use one of our services actively in a given month. And we provide some of those services that those banks can't or, you know, find more efficient to use kind of a third party on. So things like settlement, international business, loan hedging is a big one of ours. And the list goes on, bond business, investment services, ALCO, et cetera.
Yeah. And you, we're going to talk about your newsletter too at the end. And you also do a terrific podcast. Caleb Stevens does a great job with that. A lot of tremendous guests. You work with a lot of different sizes of community banks. Well, Chris, you're in the forefront of everything. You know innovation, you know AI, you know the economy, you know banking, and we're going to talk about all those things. So recently in your newsletter that I get every week, the Banker to Banker newsletter, you talked about Microsoft Copilot, and I couldn't not start with AI. Talk about what you're seeing with banks using Microsoft Copilot as well as AI in general. What's going on there?
Sure. So AI is obviously on every banker's mind at some level. And, I liken it to when we first got the internet way back when and what that really meant. So it's 1999 and it's already big, but we're all trying to figure it out. That's kind of where we're at now with AI. There is no doubt that AI is going to change the face of banking. There's already stories where it has. And I point out in that article, Klarna is one that already have saved $40 million and kind of have revolutionized how they interact with customers as a result. It will be big. One of the easiest ways to get involved is through Copilot. So if you're a Microsoft bank and you're already used to using the Office Suite, Outlook, Word, et cetera, Copilot fits right in, seamless, $30 a person a month. And, you know, it will boost productivity. We have yet to determine. We're just starting down that path. So too soon, but in some of our tests and some of the other people we've talked to, you know, it's 2 to 5 times type of productivity boost, depending on how often you use it. So I think it's going to be big. I think it's an easy entry point. And if not that, then I think it's, you know, one, a come upon every bank to experiment, but also, you know, if it's not the Microsoft Copilot, it's probably something else. But we went ahead and built out Tate, which is our ChatGPT model to use internally. We've written about that. That's going real well. So that's one experimentation that we had that we've been using since, you know, April, and, you know, building it out and now live with it. And then we'll have others as well. And we have an AI governance group standing up, both handling policy, procedures, managing risk, and also looking ahead about what else we need.
Now, I want to talk about, circle back to Tate. But here's what's kind of interesting. I read articles all the time about using Copilot, ChatGPT. There's a new one, Perplexity, which I use and I kind of like. I think lost in all of this, Chris, and maybe you can comment on what you're seeing, is how banks are training their people to use this. You know, banks say, well, it's too risky. We just won't do it. Or, yeah, we're going to do it. What do you see in your clients do around teaching bankers how to use the tool and then to use it in context within their daily responsibilities?
Yeah, great, great question. And probably still too early to tell. I would say, you know, at South State, we work close. We have a great corporate training group that helped us just kind of focus on Tate, because training, to your point, is huge in terms of managing the risk, but also getting the productivity out of it. And then also, you know, obviously helping bankers use the product, which is probably our biggest challenge. You know, no one's indifferent to AI. They're either too scared of it to try it, or, you know, they love it, or, you know, it's just one of those tasks that they think they have to do. They haven't really gotten around to doing it yet. It's on their list and they don't, you know, really realize the importance of that. So everyone has an opinion and you got to kind of harness that and train across the spectrum. We're starting that now. We've heard other banks are doing the same. I don't know of any bank right now that has a comprehensive, you know, quote unquote AI training, you know, discipline, but I'm sure it's coming. And I know, you know, it's aspirational that I think what I'd love to see us do at South State, because I think it's incumbent upon every bank to train their workforce, and not just, you know, new entries, but also, you know, senior management, you know, from the board on down. Basically, everyone needs AI training. I do think everyone also needs a certain level of coding just to understand the new environment, what an API is, how an API works. There's certain functions like that that I think is just the new part of in the new fabric of banking.
Well, and here's what's so interesting. You used Microsoft Copilot and you developed Tape. Now there's ChatGPT, and you could, you know, a number of them that are out there.
That's right.
Why did you go that route of developing your own internal AI, and talk a little bit about adoption and how people are using it?
Yeah. And just to be clear, we're not on Copilot yet. We're just starting down that journey. So it's too early. We're just researching that and training. And we wrote about some of the things that we're thinking about to answer the questions of, you know, when and how far and how to get the most out of it. But to answer your question, you know, we were big on, we have a fantastic forward-looking IT group. And, you know, they had the foresight to say, you know, and wanted to support the initiative. So while it's easy for somebody like me to come up with an idea, like this is what we should be doing as a strategy and a tactic, they're the ones that actually have to execute it. And so I was very fortunate to partner with them, as well as our compliance and risk group, et cetera, and then figure out how can we best use that. We thought Tape, on top of ChatGPT, the Microsoft version of ChatGPT, so it's, you know, a walled garden, closed system, it's not public, and just to use it internally was the entry point that we should be doing. Adoption has been strong. Right now, we have a fantastic intranet where we have all our knowledge-based articles. It's still going to take sometime, you know, like Google, to figure out to do a search, find out which article is appropriate, read through each of them. With Tape, now you can condense that and save, you know, multiple times. Instead of 11 minutes of search, it's, you know, sub 1 minute to get the answer you need. So it saves a bunch of time, and that time is really important if you're in front of a customer. We'll expand its use over time as we test and be, you know, cognizant of the risks involved. But we thought it was important to go hands-on and learn. We may not ultimately further develop Tape past where we are. We may want to use a third party, but to gain that knowledge, we thought it was important to go hands-on. And every bank has to make their own decision depending on their resources and capabilities. We're just blessed with an IT department that is A, forward-thinking, and B, had the capacity, and C, had the expertise to handle it.
Are you a commercial or business banker looking to build relationships with small and mid-sized companies? RelPro is a business development and relationship management solution being used by bankers to find new prospects, learn more about them, and keep tabs on them, as well as your existing customers. Want to learn more? Go to RelPro.com to schedule a demo today.
Yes, and some banks have that capacity because of your size and your strength and your innovation. You have the capacity to do it. But some community banks, most community banks, don't have that capacity. But then there's Alloy Labs, who is helping organizations with a lot of different services around innovation and things that customers are really wanting. You're involved with Alloy Labs, and you may have been involved since the beginning. Talk about Alloy Labs and some of the things you're seeing come out of there.
Yeah, we were one of the founding banks of Alloy Labs. Great organization. And I'm the first to tell you that, you know, I was skeptical to start. Jason and his team over at Alloy Labs have done a fantastic job at organizing banks. And we get one of the huge advantages of Alloy Labs is we have a number of different initiatives at Alloy Labs, and I can monitor some and learn from other banks. Well, they can do the same for me, so that I pick and choose, you know, what we're involved with. But it's a fantastic group of forward-looking banks. And I do want to dispel the myth. It's not all about size, that just because, you know, there's no great size to handle AI. You can handle it almost any bank. The expertise that you need has gotten a lot easier to obtain. And the capacity and resources are a lot easier these days. And almost anything, the advent of the cloud, et cetera, has just made it so much easier to kick off some of these initiatives. And when you pay, like ChatGPT, Tape, on a per use basis, it's cost effective for almost any size bank. And it does, you know, you obviously have to have the controls in place. And so you have to be somewhat forward thinking in that respect. But Alloy Labs is just perfect. We have banks of all sizes. So that just proves that myth that no matter what we're looking at, Current projects in identity, in banking as a service, a number of different things across the board that are both technology and innovation based, but also, you know, risk based as well. And so we try to solve common problems and try to divide up that cost and that effort and try to get ideas. So, you know, one of the ones that I feel passionately about is identity as it concerns for payments. And it's just fantastic to hear different banks' perspectives that it gets us to a place where I couldn't be.
So let's talk about some banking related things. Deposits are still king and queen. We need them. What are some success strategies you're seeing banks do to garner core deposits?
Yeah, well, some of that fight has already been lost. Hopefully, you know, back in 2020 when deposits were cheap, that's when you started working on, you know, restructuring your deposit base to be less interest rate sensitive, more performance based, looking at the duration of some of these deposits, the sensitivities, the beta, and the longevity. And so it starts there. Hopefully it's a lesson for all bankers that maybe have missed it last cycle, but now get to live through it again. The importance of always managing your deposit base and having a strategy overall. If I walk into a bank and or see your website and you have a rate, you know, first and foremost in your branch or on your website, you're doing it wrong. You're training your customers and, more importantly, your employees to be rate sensitive. So that's what's not to do. What to do is, you know, as we say in banking, we're all about service. And so this is really the time to where the rubber meets the road to prove that. And so hopefully banks are developing products and handling marketing and sales accordingly to really promote non-interest rate sensitive deposits. And that means, you know, engaging your customers a number of ways, going after the right customers and making sure that they're not rate sensitive, but they're actually service sensitive, like we expound in banking and going it that way. And so marketing is, I think, is the minimum that every bank can do to always have marketing channels going, multiple campaigns, whether it's health savings account, one of my favorites, treasury management services, which is completely underrated in our industry, given the value that it brings to many banks. I can go on and on, but there are, you know, probably a dozen-ish products that we always should be marketing, always should be growing. And if banks did that, they'd be in a much better spot, and it's never too late to start.
Well, the folks that house the deposits are in the physical locations, and there is so much discussion about the branch. Is it going away? Is it stay-in? I'd love to know from your perspective, not one of those two, because who knows, we're always going to have branches. What are some responsibilities you're seeing for branch managers and folks in the branches, and how have they changed over the years?
Yeah. So, you know, again, we're lucky here at South State that we have a fantastic retail group, fantastic branch staff that really understands their role in trying to help that customer, whether it's, you know, the individual household or the small business. We, you know, work closely, but our branch is really that forward facing store, physical store, as you say, that we think there's always going to be a need for it. And it might be less in the future as, you know, our online capabilities get more and more, but always at the end of the day, banking is about people. You want your people in your community. We are very community focused. Every market president, every regional president has the autonomy to manage business as they see fit. And it's really proven, particularly in deposit gathering, for example, really proven effective to know where we can, you know, where we can get the rate out of the market, where we can get the volume out of the market, et cetera. And that branch staff is really, you know, ground point zero to do that. And that interaction, one, to gather intelligence about what's happening in any given market, but two, also to, you know, kind of promote our banking services and services that clients need across the board is critical. And so I think the branch changes over time. I think it's a lot about training and helping customers understand some of the digital products and use the digital products. But it's a way that when a customer wants to go face to face for whatever reason, they can do it. And I just, you know, I always hearken it to, you know, the cell service. You know, you can do almost anything over the phone or online with Verizon, AT&T, et cetera. But at the end of the day, if you're really having problems, you want to pull that report, you want that office close by. And that's what I think the branch is in banking.
Yeah. And you hit on a pet peeve of mine. You talked about treasury management services. So I was talking to a bank the other day, about $700 million bank. And I said, so who sells treasury management services in your bank. They said, well, we have a treasury person who's in operations. I said, well, that's not the question I asked. And bottom line is, their commercial lenders were selling treasury management services, which means they weren't selling any treasury management services. What's the problem here, Chris? Why aren't more community banks looking at treasury management as a vital part of their level of sales and proactivity?
Yeah, some of it is just, I think, legacy issues of where it fits in. But I think, banks, as an overarching comment, banks have not done the greatest job at promoting their products across the board. And we many banks don't even know what their most profitable products are and what's not. So if any bank stopped and realized the importance and value of treasury management clients, I think that would open up their eyes. And if you saw that profitability, we have a relationship profitability model called Loan Command. It's cheap enough, $89 a person for any one banker. They can get on it, model the treasury management services, and see that a good treasury management customer is 300, 400, 500% risk-adjusted return on equity, and compared to a loan that maybe is 18% on a good day, it opens up your eyes. And so as you go after and then you allocate resources and marketing, we tend to market everything all the same instead of allocating resources to your point and sales resources, I might add. And if you stop to understand the profitability of treasury management, you would say, oh no, that needs a dedicated sales force. It needs a sales force that's not tied up in operations. Operational support should be separate, and we should have incentives. We should have best practices. We should have training, all that around selling treasury management services. It is that important. And for me, I think it's the way to the future that if you're going to capture that high value corporate or large small business client, you're going to need treasury management services. So I encourage all banks, including ourselves, to keep building out that product, both in terms of capabilities, technological capabilities, but also to your point, sales and marketing acumen.
Yeah, good. So I was watching a TV show this morning, and it basically said that the average election cycle is a little over 5 months. We're in a long cycle here. We got 8 months to hear these two folks. What kind of effect do you think the economy is going to see based on what happens here? What's your crystal ball look like?
Yeah, well, my crystal ball says that even after the election cycle, the economy is stronger than I think the market is projecting. I don't think, this is one personal opinion, I don't think we're going to see the rate cuts. I've been saying this for a while, that the economy is too strong right now. We can't afford a rate cut, and we're in the middle of inflation week. So, it's somewhat interesting week when we get PPI and CPI to see where it comes out. But I think inflation will be harder to get rid of than the economy thinks. And I think people are still spending, the consumer and businesses are still spending. And you can't really have a recession with the level of low unemployment or the high employment that we have now. We've seen a couple stronger job prints. Even with the revisions, they're still strong. I think we'll continue to see that. And as a result, I think that the rate cuts that are expected in the market get pushed out. I think the election cycle exacerbates some of that. We've seen, we're still only halfway through. And not only halfway through in terms of actual spending, the Biden administration's original Infrastructure and Jobs Act spending. So there's still trillions of dollars to go out there. We have the new infrastructure spending bill now that affects, will affect community bankings across the board. That's still going to be inflationary, still going to be stimulative for the U.S. economy. And we still have money for things like the earned retention credits, a number of other tax credits that have still, were brought about during the pandemic that haven't actually been put in the system. All that is still stimulative. That's part of the reason why I think we'll still see a stronger economy than expected. We'll still see higher inflation, and the election cycle will just pander to the masses. Right or wrong on the Biden administration, they'll continue to do that and play that up. And I think any new president will probably do the same to look forward and to keep their party in office, and we'll see what happens.
Be interesting. Well, you talked about strength, and one of the articles that you wrote in your newsletter a while ago was some industries that you think are really deposit rich. And I always think, well, if you're going to go fishing, which I love to do, you go where the fish are. I'm curious, now, here we are in 2024. I'm a community banker, and I'm in a pretty rich market. I've got all kinds of different industries that I could go after and prospect to. Who are some that I should be really talking to?
Yeah, so if you look at the profitability of your deposit customers, which drive the profitability of your bank, and it is, if going after deposits is really a driver of franchise value, we looked at some quantitative evidence in the blog about, how much more important deposits are to, say, loans or fees or working on your investment portfolio, et cetera. Deposits are important, undoubtedly, for franchise value. And with, as you said, within that, there are certain industries that are more deposit rich. And so you either want two types of customers, those that have a bunch of extra cash sitting around for whatever reason, because that's common in the industry, or two that are heavily have heavy payment volume, and so you want a payment platform to go after that volume. Instant payments being the latest trend that everyone has to, I think, have a plan for to capture that customer. But as you go after those customers that are heavy payment focused and have large deposits and or either one create, outsized value, and then you look at, okay, who are those? Well, it's the insurance companies. It's and you can find it across the board, but insurance companies and professional services have those need. Nonprofits are a big one, and it goes on and on about those with outsized cash balances or cash needs. And we like to bank everyone in the community and community banks. And if you want to do that, great. I just say maybe while you're banking everyone, you put more resources to those profitable customers and go after them with your more profitable products. Because the secret formula in banking is, you and I've talked about, is selling profitable customers, profitable products. Sounds easy, rarely done in our industry. And if you can just skew a little bit, you'll get better return on equity and return on assets.
Yeah, but we have a finite amount of time. Let's target our energies. Companies like RelPro, who's a sponsor of this program, allows you to look at the industries that you're exactly talking about. And if you want more deposits, health savings accounts, who has them? RelPro will be able to tell you that. All those things become really important. But I got to go back to the election though.
And real quick on that point, that's an interesting. So we use their services, like them, great at finding contacts, but also great at looking at who's looking at what. So, there's a lot of signals that are easily followed up on in a company like RealPro that can tell you what people are searching for or what they're looking, for in the marketplace on Google or Bing or what have you. And then you find the contact and reach out. There are certain points that, like these infrastructure bills, for example, you can kind of look ahead and say, okay, who's going to get those contracts? Who's already approved in my community? And it's so critical if you're in the key cities that are being targeted, but Portland, Duluth, Vancouver, Washington, Cape Cod, it goes on and on. But you can say, hey, who's going to get these contracts? And then who's going to need, either a loan or a line of credit or cash management services, and look that up on one of these services. It's critical. And so we do that for both the deposit side, but also on the loan side for refinancing. You do a UCC search. RealPro has some of that information, et cetera, and kind of find out, well, hey, it's at that competitor. It was made at that time at that rate. We should be contacting them because that bank probably isn't doing a strategic refinance, something that we're very passionate about as a way to increase margins now, make long-term loans and do some refinancing now, managing that credit risk now, as opposed to waiting till we are already in a session, 2 years from now or a year from now, whenever that is, and not having a whole lot of options. So that service is critical, and services like that are critical, I think, driving business forward.
Last, you talked about loans. I want to talk about loan demand a little bit. But last summer, you were kind enough to ask me to come into Chicago as your South State Bank Correspondent Division was doing a big meeting. And the meeting really was this group of folks who help banks with a program you call ARC. So I'd love to have you talk about it a little bit in terms of what it is and also how it might help spur loan demand when there really isn't any in a community.
Yeah, ARC solves a combination of problems, again, that we believe wholeheartedly, and that's why we have the product. It's not the other way around. But as I mentioned, strategic refinance, going after and refinancing your customers now and that are coming up for renewal in the next 2 years, having that conversation now and maybe refinancing ahead of time, giving them credit for the rate and making them, if it's appropriate, if they still are in it for the long haul, that long-term fixed rate loan, hedging it back. on our balance sheet. So the community bank has no derivative on their balance sheet. We handle everything for them, including the accounting and the capital requirements, et cetera. We do all that on our balance sheet and making sure that bank has a floating rate loan, which is what they really want. They get the best of all worlds. And right now with the inversion and, I don't know where rates are going, but that inversion likely means that even if we do have a recession, that yield curve is going to pivot and that long-term rate's not going to change. So there's no need to wait. I think that inversion is going to come out. So I think it's an arbitrage opportunity that 10-year rate is, 20 basis points cheaper than that 5-year, 3-year rate. So I think it's something to take advantage of. The ARC program is spectacular for that. And not for every customer, just for those customers that can handle, the long-term fixed rate interest rate risk and that want to lock things in now. And for that bank that, wants that floating rate, which is most banks, instead of guessing and speculating where rate's going, they should just be managing their deposits on the short-term side and their assets.
It's a phenomenal product. It really is. I want to just a couple more questions. One has to do with legislation, because we as bankers are beholden to Congress in so many ways. And a lot of people say, well, we're deregulated, but we're a very regulated industry. What are some forms of legislation that are on the docket that community banks ought to be thinking about as we move toward the middle and end of 2024?
Yeah, we got some doozies coming along. I think banks have done a good job at commenting, and so we've seen some extensions. But, on the docket right now is a debit interchange fee reduction. And so that, I think incumbent upon every bank to weigh in positively or negatively as they see fit. But I think, if you take the lead of the ABA or the ICBA, I think those are great organizations to be part of to help with the lobbying effort and to understand their analysis of that. The NSF fees, overdraft loans, there's two pieces of legislation on that that I think is going to drastically affect some of the fees and products that banks get. Open banking standards are another one. We've seen a series of legislation changes, that banks are now having to collect more bits of information. And some of these, have the right intent, and if we need to weigh in on the execution. Some of these, I think, are misguided in their intent, and we need education there. And then some of these, I think, are just going to be natural for banks to adapt, that they're going to have to figure out it's the right thing to do. Congress is trying to do the right thing. They got execution about right, and it's the bank that really has to adapt. It's one of those three buckets. And so I think, every bank should have that on their radar screen at some level, even if it's working with the ICBA or ABA in particular to influence change. But we've seen banks weigh in on a comment period, and we've seen that comment period extended. And so I think the Congress in particular kind of taking another look at that and making sure they get it right.
Made by bankers for bankers, Vertical IQ is your trusted source for reliable, convenient, and focused industry intelligence, helping your team save time, boost sales, and gain a competitive edge. Learn more at verticaliq.com.
It's going to be an interesting year. You have 15,000 followers, and there's every reason why, based on all that you do. But you're very well read. I mean, we've had dinner, and you read books that with words and titles that I don't even understand. And so you're a very well-read person. Who are you following, Chris, in banking to help you sharpen your saw?
Yeah, it's a great question. I have long been on, obviously as a lifelong learner, long been on a program that I have is that I challenge myself to take two big initiatives a year and to learn about that. AI, for example, this year is trying to, get better at understanding AI. So I follow, both people on the technical side of AI, but also on the, ethics, regulation, risk of that. And so I try to pick out like who's talking and who's actually delivering fresh content, insight. And there's a lot of people that regurgitate content, but, you're obviously one that I follow that on the sales marketing side. I look to you to make sure that I, keep abreast of best practices. And so because of you, we have a reading program. You mentioned our correspondent division. We have a book club basically within our division that we read a book, challenge each other. We present, we just had our first, book report of the year a couple days ago with Ed Kaufman kicking us off on a book that you suggested that we read, that he read and then presented back. We talk about how to implement it. Many of the authors, your newest one, Guy Kawasaki, I'm reading right now, trying to study up. I'll take that back to our book club and teach that. But they're, you know, whether it's the Alloy Labs team, which puts out some great content, you know, across the board on the innovation side, great people out there, and just try to follow a kind of a portfolio of people. And I add or delete people all the time. So once a year, usually every December when things slow down during the holidays, after Christmas, I go through and start deleting people and adding people and start asking people like you, like, who should I be following? Who do you like? And always meant it. So I just did that.
Wow. And I got to tell you that when I'm on a call with a banker, and I'm not on as many calls as I used to be, but when I'm on a call with a banker, one of the questions I always ask, and they kind of look at me like I with a bad beer face, I'll say, well, who do you work with in the correspondent area? Because I am always trying to refer business to Chris Nichols and his
team. And you do a great job. Thank you.
They are phenomenal. Chris, your newsletter, your podcast, yourself, how do people sign up for the newsletter? How do they get a hold of you?
You know, any search will take you to our newsletter. You know, any topic, or if you just search, you know, South State Correspondent Bank, you'll come to our website. You can sign up. It's free. Always take input. So I get a lot of bankers that say, hey, what about this topic? What about that topic? And it kicks me off on many new, you know, areas of learning for myself. So that's one. And on that, you can get the newsletter. And as you mentioned, Caleb has a fantastic podcast that we work on together, but he's really the driver of that. And that goes out. We're always looking for banks that are doing it right, that we can kind of highlight similar to yourself. And then, you know, you can follow me on LinkedIn as well. That's a great social platform for myself that I try to, you know, put content out there and find out what people are doing. And not just in banking, but all, you know, I get a lot of my ideas from following the latest of what's happening at Amazon or the latest what's happening in you know, various fintechs or various technology companies, et cetera, watching some of that real closely. And so when we look at what's happening with not only large language models and AI, but also large action models now, being able to string different bot agents together in an intelligent fashion. I think that's kind of the new future of banking 5-10 years away that I think is I'm starting to try to come up to speed on now, things like quantum computing. I'm just a rookie at that, just trying to learn about how quantum computing will affect banking and payments in particular. So I always have these areas that I'm just learning and trying to look for best practices. Would love other feedback on that and love groups to talk about that with.
Banking is better because you're in it, Chris Nichols. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you, Jack.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Jack Rants with Modern Bankers with my friend, Chris Nichols. Want to be more authentic when you use social media? Well, you can be if you check out my interview with next week's guest, Corey Perlman. Corey's newest book, Authentically Social, is a must read, and we cover lots of ground on that subject next week on Jack Rants with Modern Bankers. This and every Jack Rants with Modern Bankers is brought to you by our good friends at RelPro and Vertical IQ. Did you know this is a podcast too? Well, it is, and we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and others. And if you listen to it, we'd appreciate a review as well. Visit our website too, themodernbanker.com, for more information. And don't forget, sign up for our free public library at themodernbanker.com/public library. And remember, make today and every day a great client day.